With everyone fighting for attention, how can your business stand out and connect with customers? Easy, with Constant Contact. Constant Contact's award-winning marketplace platform has helped millions of small businesses stand out, stay top of mind, and see big results fast. It's okay if you don't know much about marketing. Constant Contact's writing assistant tools and automation features help you craft messaging and say the right things at the right time. I use this to help write and send my email newsletters, and you should too. So get going and start growing your business today with a free trial at ConstantContact.com. Just go to ConstantContact.com right now. Constant Contact, helping the small stand tall. ConstantContact.com.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
And welcome to In the Know, the Hornets 24/7 podcast. Your knowledgeable hosts are Michael McNamara.
Me and a grizzly bear, I'm betting on me.
And me, Ryan Schwan.
I've been playing some Dungeons & Dragons because I'm really cool like that.
Let's get it started. All Hornets, all the time.
Welcome to the show. The trade deadline has passed. The Hornets just pulled off a 1-3 week, managing to win one game, which is unusual for them. So we're joined today by both Michael, as usual, and our good buddy Jason Calmes from the blog. He has some insight into the lease agreement that just went down. Jason, Michael, how are you guys doing?
I'm doing great. How are you, Jason?
I'm okay.
Just okay.
So for about, what, 5-6 years now, we've had to endure every year the national media talking about how Hornets are going to struggle to hit their benchmark and that the team will have that its opt-out activated and they're inevitably going to go to California somewhere or to Kansas City or to some other city. Sonics would get their team back. Well, it sounds like that whole benchmark idea, that whole number to shoot for is gone from this new lease. So, Jason, take us through that. Is there any sort of opt-outs that seem to be written into this new lease with the state?
I'm positive there are.
Okay.
So, I mean, every lease, it has to have something in it that says if the arena isn't able to host games, then that's it, right? Katrina was an example of this. The Hornets weren't required to play their home games there for that reason. Barring natural disaster, okay, this is supposed to be just like everybody else's lease, right? the Hornets can't just elect to not play their games there should this lease go into effect.
So, if the coming zombie apocalypse happens, we shouldn't expect to watch Hornets games. In New Orleans, at least.
Well, if it's a zombie apocalypse.
Yes, I have like actual people at my work
Yeah.
who are analysts. That's actually their job name. Their name of their job is solutions analyst. There's two people who are fairly certain that at some point in the near future, we're going to have a disease-based zombie apocalypse.
Well, so, I mean, in my mind, if that happens, the arena's still there, and they will field a team and then has to play their home games there. They'll just all look like Darren Williams.
So wait, you guys laughed at me for the slightly eyebrow-raising idea that superheroes will soon, be in sports, and we need to make rules for them. But you guys are readily talking about the zombie apocalypse as if it's right around the corner.
He laughed. I gave you an example. How that happened.
And in case it was lost on you, I mock these people at work too.
Okay. So Jason, I mean, I guess there was little fanfare on our site and around the Hornets Nation when this lease agreement went down. But again, the pessimistic person or the one who's just been waiting for, you know, the next shoe to drop, they say, okay, that's great, lease agreement. When is this ownership thing going down? Now that the lease is in place, your feelings, are we much closer to getting that ownership announcement?
No. Here are the dates that are important here. The lease, as it's written, will go into effect on July 1st of this year. It's contingent upon the sale of the team from the NBA to someone. And that includes the NBA Board of Governor approval. It means actual effective sale. It's contingent upon the tax credits that the team currently receives, about $3.6 million annually, continuing. And it's contingent upon some agreed upon in the lease, this is some sort of specified, improvements to the arena being passed by the state. And this requires a bond issue and all these things. That bill that includes that bond issue isn't even on the docket yet, or whatever it is they call it, the agenda, whatever. The commendation by the legislature of Better Than Ezra for their contributions to Louisiana alternative rock is on the docket, however. So it's understandable. But
oh God,
why are you laughing?
I can't even remember what songs Better Than Ezra played. I remember the name, but that's
good.
It.
They had that good.
Oh no!
Remember that one?
Oh yeah, I remember that.
There you go. See, it's catchy.
As soon as you said the wall, then suddenly it was just call click. Thanks.
Of course. Yes, and they had a couple of ones in the blood, blah, blah, blah. So we got that to get us through the lean time. The legislative session ends no later than June 4th of this year. It can end earlier. It's so many days within so many days, so it just depends on how quickly they burn through the days they have to work. If they end on the 6 p.m. of that last day, they still have a lot of months to where the NBA can drag this out to when it happens. Really, the only date that matters for us, if we want to talk real effect on fans, is the owner needs to be in place when the Hornets make their draft pick. Or at least when the first person makes a draft pick, I guess, because we could trade, right? So that's really when the owner needs to be in place. That's June 28th. So this lease being agreed upon is essentially all the parties involved that aren't the owners of the arena and the owners of the team, the prospective owners of the team, saying, this is a good arrangement, and the people who actually own these assets should be thrilled. You hire us to run these things. We all agree that this is a good as it gets for all parties involved. You guys have to sign it. So the obstacle is removed. There's some definition to the revenue and the finances and the sort of really sort of the economic forces involved as well. I can talk about that. But this is just a precondition that had to be there. The things that still have to happen, the sale, the approval of this by the state, those still have to go down. And the only real timetables on that are the end of the session on the owner side and really July 1st on the NBA side. Because I think
so really, in the end, this lease is just this lease agreement is just one more thing to feed into the discussion with the NBA with those two groups that are still in the running to say, yes, I want to buy this team, and here's my final offer. That's all it is. There's nothing binding here at all.
Correct. Right. Now, one of the things that is important and that people fear, right, is that some people seem to think that the team may be sold to an owner, and then the owner, very quickly, mind you, after signing paperwork to buy the team, will not sign the paperwork on the lease, right? So they've apparently thought of that, and that's not really going to be legally possible. So all these transactions exist in a sort of legal synergy, and you can't have any one without the other. So coming up with a scenario that I haven't heard people complain about, Raj Badal can't go in and sign the lease without having the team, right? So he can't just say, well, I have the lease, now I'm the only person you can sell it to. If you sell it to Gary Schwest, he won't have a place to play because I won't let him. So none of that's involved. All of these things have to happen together. So you can't buy the team and run away. You can't lease the arena and not let the team play here, et cetera.
Right. And one of the cool things in there I saw as part of the agreement would tie the NBA into getting an all-star game as well in New Orleans, which I can't see as anything but a win-win, because every single person who's ever talked about the all-star game that they held in New Orleans recently was that it was one of the best they've had in a while. So,
yep.
Like, L.A. is pretty much, you know, L.A. and New Orleans were considered two of the best. So,
yeah, the NBA uses those. They announce them a year in advance. We're guaranteed one during the term of the lease, but they can't tell us now, right, because it's not planned.
But, right.
It's a financial boom, and they tend to be rewards for things like building a palace like the Amway Center, right? So what the Hornets are doing is getting – a lot of improvements to the arena in the next two off seasons. $50 million is what they have benchmarked, or what's it benchmarked in my, what they have earmarked, I guess, for it. That's part of the bond issue that has to be approved. But they said it would be a virtually new building. So this is a little bit of sales speak. The green and silver outside is going to stay the same. It will be covered up just in various places by digital signs instead of just tarps with the Crescent City Champion sponsor logos on them. So it'll look more high-tech, and it'll have more lighting and stuff like this, like the Superdome got recently. They said the inside is going to see the majority of the changes, and they called them revenue-enhancing changes. So the fan experience changes. That's what we'll see, but they will all be revenue-enhancing, so they will cost us.
So are they buying the first pick of the draft for us? Because that's a real revenue-enhancer.
Well, some of these things have to work on non-game day.
Right.
What's happening is...
Is there anything else of particular note in that lease you think people would be interested, or did most of it rest kind of boring details?
Yeah, even more boring than this.
I was going to say, the rest of it boring details? I'm tempted. I see Green Lantern is on HBO right now. I swore I'd never watch that movie. I'm tempted right now.
No, I think one thing that's just written between the lines that's important is that removing all these benchmarks and inducements and things like this changes the game of how the Hornets have to behave. Because now that when you have a lease that moves a team here, it's a good lease. Once the team is here, you're sort of over benefiting them, right?
Right.
So now the Hornets have to behave like a more traditional business. They're assuming more risk, and they're going to reap more reward if they behave right. So before, if I have an inducement that says if I don't make X money, I'm going to get it from the state, then why should I go sell naming rights? And by the way, they weren't sold, right? Now...
Right.
I'm not guaranteed that stuff, so I should go do these things.
Right.
And an owner who's thinking like that is probably going to think a little bit more about the product they put out on the floor as well.
Okay. Hornets champions in 2018.
Yeah, I think
heard it here first.
I think they're saving it. They're you know, if the Hornets pick Anthony Davis number one overall, there is actually a company that I found called Unibrow Pickle Ranch Productions LLC. you could check out there was, but just Google Unibrow Pickle Ranch Productions. I think that's the perfect sponsor when we get Anthony Davis. And the only
holy, are you? I don't even. I'm not sure that sounds, it doesn't sound safe.
Neither does a Unibrow, but I think the other thing that I definitely want for the new arena, and maybe in the next podcast you could explain to me how they did this. But that 3D logo on the Raptors arena just gets me to watch. And there's really no reason I would ever watch a Raptors game. But that little 3D logo on the baseline is pretty sweet. I want one of those.
Oh, there was one other thing, a practice facility. The practice facility is back on the table as well.
The one downtown?
They may build one downtown. It's unclear, but the sort of rumors have been that they may put it downtown. They're extending the streetcar line down there. And as this Champion Square thing begins to unfold, there's some buildings, things around there where they could really put a practice facility in with other things. Some people have mentioned this before without really sourced information, but, you know, a practice facility could in theory be used for lots of things. It would be one floor in a larger structure, you know, for parking or even residences and who knows. There's a lot going on down there, and the state really wants some kind of activity going on in that part of the city often. That's where the Hornets fit in. So
okay.
Could be a lot of other good things coming in the next bit. There's also money to improve the arena over the course of the lease besides this $50 million to start with. So you see, the Seattle lesson is your arena is important, and this lease isn't just about holding the team here. It's about making sure at the end of the lease the building is still at least acceptable.
All right. Okay. Thanks for coming on, Jason, to talk about this.
Yep. No problem.
And we'll talk to you later, I'm sure, when more information comes out.
I apologize that I only knew about immensely boring things.
That's all right. At least you brought the good news of the week. Now we get to talk about the 1-3 record, the lack of trades, and all the depressing stuff. Thanks for the good news to start us off.
Yeah, and don't forget about the hard games this week. Talk to you later.
Bye.
Oh, sorry. Lease agreement that went well. I mean, that was the good news of the week, but I would think that most Hornets fans, if you were to ask them what really stuck out this week, was the trade deadline, or I guess for the Hornets, the lack thereof.
Right.
At about what time during the whole process did you realize the Hornets weren't gonna do anything? And you know, how did you feel about it when 301 struck?
I thought, well, honestly, I was kind of hoping all the way through until even after the deadline, when they had those other trades still in the pipeline, that they might do something. I was kind of disbelieving that they didn't. I mean, obviously, when you got word that, you know, Milwaukee had made the move the day before, or was it even 2 days before?
Right.
And then as soon as you got word that both the Pacers and Houston had made other moves, that, you know, pretty much trimmed down the options for Kamen and Landry to very, very little. So I was pretty worried that nothing was going to get done when I heard those. But, I mean, I put up my thing. I was disappointed by it. It's essentially the Hornets didn't turn in some current assets for future assets. That's kind of the number one thing they should be doing. And a scale of 1 to 10, how much of a missed chance would you rate this as for the Hornets?
See, I could understand being disappointed, because if I play the lottery and I don't win, I'm disappointed. Even though it was a long shot that I was going to get anything out of it. But as far as not really taking advantage of it, when you really look at the trades that were made, I mean, to me it was blatantly obvious that if you wanted any kind of decent asset back from a team, you are going to have to take on future salary. I mean, I think it's getting clearer and clearer. The day that I saw the new CBA, I knew this would happen, but I think it's getting clearer and clearer that teams are really doing away with bad contracts. You know, they're just not going to overpay people anymore, and they're willing to give up assets to do it. I mean, I think a perfect example of this was, and I'm curious to how you feel, because I know in the off season you were pretty adamant that the Hornets should go after this guy, but Denver signs Nene this off season, and just a half a season in, they completely get rid of him. You know, for JaVale McGee, who they probably won't re-sign, they essentially get rid of Nene because of the, you know, the fear of that contract. I guess, what did you think, before we go on to the Hornets trades, but what did you think about, you know, the Nuggets giving up Nene and not really getting much back for him?
Well, I mean, I don't necessarily agree that they're just going to get JaVale McGee and toss him out the window. I think JaVale McGee's not a horrible thing in return for Nene. Nene is a better player. But honestly, they're clearly experiencing the same thing that other people who watching NBA's and stats have noticed, which is Nene's not playing very well. And he's not, I mean, he's out for lame issues, like, you know, he has a sore knee kind of thing, or a sore ankle. He's not out because they don't even call them sprained ankles in Denver. So clearly they're not happy with the fact that he's sitting out. So, I mean, it is kind of surprising that they cut bait that quickly. But on one hand, you got to admire them for being willing to do that if they don't think he's going to work out and they think he's going to be lazy through the length of the contract. And clearly shows that I don't know what the hell I'm talking about, because I wanted them to go full bore after Nene.
Yeah, no, I think it's just, I think it's the length of it. And yeah, that's kind of, people are saying now Nene wasn't playing well, but most of the reports out of Denver was that they were looking to move Nene from the first week of the season.
Right.
So,
which is crazy.
Yeah, but
how do you sign somebody to that? I mean, $13 million a year for, was it 5 years or four? I don't remember anymore.
Yeah.
I mean, how do you sign someone to that and then be trying to move him right away?
Yeah.
That's, wow.
It's something, you know, that the teams are just so afraid of, you know, what's going to essentially be a hard cap coming forward. But so anyway, just, you know, looking at all the trades, it looks like the Hornets could have gotten one of those assets we talked about, a draft pick in the 20s, if they were to take on a contract like Luke Walton, or, you know, essentially take on some more money for next year. But I really, the more and more I thought about it, and I even brought it up in some prior podcasts, is I don't really know if, you know, that would be a valuable asset to the Hornets. I mean, we have Aminu, we have Henry, you know, any guy that the Hornets take in the 20s will be competing for minutes for them, and you could only have so many young guys on a team and try to develop them before it's just being a little overly redundant. So I guess I'm just not in the camp that Kamen is automatically a goner, and I also don't believe that his contract is going to be that big. And to me, if I'm Demps, and, you know, the most I could get for Kamen is some second round pick, which is something that we've seen that Demps doesn't value anyway, or, you know, give me the bird rights to Kamen. I would just prefer to have the bird rights to Kamen, and I guess I'm just not too torn up about the fact that the Hornets didn't get a second round pick.
Right. And I mean, so the idea of a first rounder is always great. And I find myself falling into this trap too, is I will trade Kamen and get like the 22nd or 23rd pick in the draft, or 20th from Boston. And, you know, that's a good trade. But you always got to check yourself, and you got to go back to like the trade value posts I always put up every single year. Or not trade value, draft value posts.
Right.
The 20th pick of the draft, I mean, if you go back and look at those numbers, you're sitting at probably a 20% chance you get a guy who is good enough to play for your team. I mean, I'm not even talking like be a starter. You have a 20% chance that they're going to be good enough to stick past 3 years with your team.
So give me a – just pick a random year between 2003 and 2008. No reason. Just pick a year. One that you like.
2004.
Okay. Yeah, and while you're doing that, I just love the power of Google. But, all right, so that was completely random. Didn't know at the time. So 2004 picks 21 through 30. Because I think that Dallas pick is top 20 protected. That's why I'm going. You have Pavel Polksadin, Victor Krapa, Sergei Manya. And actually this year you had some decent ones. You had Kevin Martin at 26, Delonte West and Kevin Allen, or Tony Allen, Beno Udra, Sasha Vujicic. So, actually, that was a decent year. It looks like about.
But look, you're still talking about 10 guys, and on that list of 10 guys, you're saying this is a decent haul. There's four people there. Vujicic didn't stick around for very long. He's back in Europe now. So I mean, maybe they stick for 5 years, but he wasn't good. So of those guys, Kevin Martin is good. Beno Udra is a backup point guard. Tony Allen's. Ben has struggled for years before he became anything.
And another thing to point out, not one of those guys is still on the team that they were drafted by because it took them 3, 4, 5 years to become decent players.
Right. So, so my whole idea all along has been, okay, so even if it's not necessarily a great pick, you're not necessarily going to get much out of it, you can always bundle it with your earlier picks and maybe move up. But, I mean, if you actually take the examples of that happening, the Oklahoma City Thunder bundled the 21st and the 26th pick and moved up for the 11th pick. That sounds good, but you got to remember they also took on $6 million of Mo Peterson's useless carcass.
Right.
It isn't. You're not looking at a big. You bundle the 21st and 26th pick, and if that's straight up, maybe you can move up to what 17, which isn't helping you that much. So. I can definitely get along with that it is a minor we were basically trading our minor benefit, our minor pieces for more very minor pieces. I would have liked to see that happen anyways, but if you're going to term this as, you know, anything that's earth-shaking for the Hornets, that's just not the truth. It's not even, you know, on a scale of 1 to 10, I'd say it's a 3.
Right, but I mean, what did upset me personally about the trade deadline is I'm so sick of the Western Conference getting better at the expense of the Eastern Conference. Like this, it's just, it's so unbalanced. So to me, there was really only two deals that, you know, over the long term will really have any impact. The first one or two things that had any impact and they both involved New Jersey. So New Jersey just gets an ultra panic mode and they trade a pick that looks like it's going to be 6, 7, 8 in a pretty deep draft for Gerald Wallace, a guy that was had for basically nothing just last year. And it's not like he's gotten any better. I don't understand that move. And that's what angers me is, you know, I defend GMs around the league when people on our site make ridiculous trade, you know, proposals. And I say, no, this team wouldn't do that. And then people bring up, yeah, but there's always this trade. And you know, I think that happens, you know, rarely. But I would love for the Hornets when, you know, essentially it would be nice, you know, when a crack addict is selling Rolexes for $20 and just happens to have one to roll by the street at that exact time.
So in other words, I think you said this somewhere, you would have liked to have – So here's one thing. I saw you say something like this. Well, why couldn't we have called up New Jersey and said, here, have Ariza and, you know, XYZ, Landry, for the rights to that pick? Because that'd be awesome for us, right?
Yeah, plus New Jersey. It's basically, if you're New Jersey, would you rather have Gerald Wallace or the trade I constructed would give them Ariza and $10 million extra in salary cap room this summer? Which to me is a no-brainer. I mean, I'd rather have Ariza and a $10 million player than Gerald Wallace, but that's just me.
Right. And I agree with that 100%. But then here's the thing. We don't know how that trade went down. We don't know if it was like the last few hours and, you know, Portland was just calling around saying, anyone want Gerald? Anyone want Gerald? Anyone want Gerald? And that said, what the hell, yes. I mean, I would not assume that Demps knew they were putting that kind of offer on the table necessarily. Because I have a feeling that you're right. Nets were in a panic mode. They're like, crap, Dwight Howard, he's not signing, he is signing, he is waving, he isn't waving, he's coming here, he's not coming here. And when finally, you know, deadline word came, yes, he has signed off on his waiver of the ETO, they just took the first deal that came their way that could give them a veteran player.
No, I mean, Gerald Wall, that was part of a trade, that was part of the original Dwight Howard trade that was talked about being done in December with Gerald Wallace and Brook Lopez going to Orlando. So they've been talking to Portland for a long time, and New Jersey's thinking is twofold. Both I vehemently disagree with. One, they believe there's only three players in this draft that they want. Kid Gilchrist, Thomas Robinson, and obviously Anthony Davis.
Where's my boy?
First of all, that's just ridiculous thinking that those are the only three guys that are worth
difference makers
than worth more than Gerald Wallace. But okay, so that's thinking one. And thinking two is that, well, the Magic were interested in Gerald Wallace and Brook Lopez before. When they get desperate again next year, we'll have these pieces to trade them. And that, I don't know. I just, whatever, they could think whatever they think. And, you know, I'm sure Dell was talking to them like everybody else. But to me, it just angers me because, you know, you look over at Portland now. Portland is going to have two lottery picks this year, and they already have Aldridge and Batum to start off with, where the Hornets, their only real cornerstone piece is a guy who might play 10 games this year.
Yeah.
So,
but they also don't have a GM or a coach or any sort of cohesion whatsoever there.
Yeah, well, I'm just saying, it got me upset that a Western Conference team got better. And then I think the other part of that trade that makes the Western Conference better is I think Deron Williams is a cinch to go to Dallas now.
Yeah, I agree.
So
and honestly, Golden State Warriors, they got better.
The Warriors got better along, especially for their, you know, the fit of what that team wants to do. They also might have gotten better by the fact that they might get to keep their own draft pick now if they continue. So,
and over long term, if you could argue that possibly Denver, JaVale McGee has the potential to be a really good player.
He's not staying there.
You really don't think so?
No, because somebody is going to offer him a stupid contract, and there's no way Denver's matching. I think Denver did that trade to essentially do what they did today, sign Wilson Chandler to a long-term deal. I mean, basically, they're putting Wilson Chandler's making half of what Nene would have made. They get Nene out of there, and they slip Wilson Chandler right in. If nobody throws crazy money at Nene, maybe they keep him for another year, but JaVale McGee's talking about wanting $12-14 million a year.
Which is crazy.
Right, but I think there so many teams are going to have cap room.
That's the one thing no one talks about right now. I mean, so many teams have cleared space. You go down the list, and, I mean, this coming free agents period isn't particularly spectacular, but there are so many teams that are going to have money to spend this summer.
Yeah.
It's crazy, the number. So I'm wondering, are these teams going to be able to actually restrain themselves and be able to look at that, you know, new CBA coming in that's going to, you know, put all kinds of pressure on you to keep your salaries down? Or are they just going to say, screw it, and a few teams desperate going to give people crazy contracts again like we always see? That's one thing that I just don't really get is the CBA, what it did was tighten your luxury tax line. It tightened that dramatically. But for years, there's always been tons and tons of teams sitting out there that don't pay the luxury tax, that still pay these stupid contracts to people that just don't deserve them. I don't see that going away, even with this luxury tax. And that's one of the things you keep pointing out with Kamen. And maybe Kamen, because of his age, won't get the insane contracts. But I still think that we're going to see stupid Rafe LaFrentz for $70 million kind of contracts out of there coming out next year.
Yeah, and see, I see it for younger guys. Like, obviously, I think DeAndre Jordan got a stupid contract. Mm-hmm. I definitely don't think he's worth maybe half of that. But DeAndre Jordan was, what, 22, 23 when he signed that contract? To me, it's you're not going to see that contract for guys who have already reached their peak. So okay. That's why I feel that way. But I guess one last question before we go on to trade. So after Golden State makes all their moves, basically they end up with Andrew Bogut and Jefferson. Would you rather have Bogut and Jefferson at $23 million a year or Okafor and Ariza at 20 for the next years after this one?
Okafor and Ariza?
Yeah, see, to me, that's the other thing with Golden State. I mean, obviously, I wouldn't have wanted to keep Monta Ellis. I would ship them off to...
Well, see, Golden State is a prime example of a stupid GM. Larry Riley's been there for years, and he's never made smart decisions. And, I mean, so going for Bogut may have been a good gamble, but then turning around and trading Steven Jackson for a longer carcass? I mean, Richard Jefferson, they were talking in salary-conscious San Antonio, they were talking about amnestying him and just eating the millions of dollars left on his contract.
Right.
I mean, this is a dumb trade. Jefferson is never going to live up to that. He's going to be horrible in a team that's losing. So you can keep saying that other teams' GMs aren't stupid. There are some pretty stupid GMs.
Well,
out there.
See, I don't know. I don't think the Jefferson one's that bad. I mean, basically, I think Jefferson is so much better than Steven Jackson from both a locker room and an on-the-court perspective that I think Steven Jackson is just a horrible contract. They're taking one more year to get a much better player.
I would rather take Steven Jackson, his contract, and say, Steven, stay home. We'll work out a buyout. If you don't want a buyout, fine. Stay home. I would rather pay him money to stay home than have Richard Jefferson on my team for 3 years at more than $10 million a year.
Yeah. I don't know. That last year of Jefferson's is a player option, and we saw him opt out of his option last time, so maybe
get lucky.
Kind of backdoor deal where Jefferson will opt out. But, yeah, no, that was interesting to me is, you know, both with New Jersey and Golden State, they made some moves that I think the Hornets could have offered them. But, I mean, especially with Malone and Golden State, have worked with Okafor and Ariza before. You know, to me, I'd rather take Ariza and Okafor than Bogut and Jefferson. And I'm sure the Hornets would have been happy to oblige and then move Monta Ellis, you know, along for some decent assets as well. So, I guess that was kind of my thing about the trade deadline. After looking at it, you know, I'd rather the Hornets have flexibility than have just, you know, picked up another average draft pick for a bad contract. But I was upset that the West got better.
All right. So let's just talk about basketball we saw this week.
Yeah.
So they lost to Charlotte on a pretty impressive play by Bismack.
Do you think were you on the bandwagon that said foul, or do you think there was any foul at all in the play?
You could have called foul on that if you wanted to, but that call's not being made at the end of a game.
Yeah.
It's just not. And I mean, I've seen many, many plays where there's that much contact down low on the body where there's no foul called. So, I mean, I'm not upset. In fact, here's the thing. I'm experiencing winner's remorse about that New Jersey's game. So I was very happy they didn't call a foul on that play because, of course, it sealed the loss. And the Hornets, you know, hopefully will get some more ping pong balls.
Yeah, and then of course they play LA 2 days after maybe their worst performance, and they come out like gangbusters against the Lakers,
yeah,
dropping everything, taking a huge lead before the refs got LA back in the game. But it was like watching a completely different team.
Yeah, and that LA game was fun for quite a long time, and you know, and it ended up, I was happy with it. I mean, it was kind of a. Do you believe Ione touched Kobe, or do you think he got all ball?
Oh, no, he fouled him, but Kobe was clearly looking to pass. That should be two shots.
Yeah.
I mean, it was clear as day. Unless Kobe often looks to the right as he shoots, he was definitely going to pass that ball. So that was my only problem with that play. But, yeah, Ione definitely touched him.
Well, anyways, so he hits those three free throws, goes to overtime. So, but we had a brief little discussion about this. What's your take on the Jersey game?
I mean, in the Chris Paul heyday when the Hornets were contenders, and I still contend that the first year of Posey, that Hornets team was actually better than the 07-08 team. They just, the injury bug struck at that time. But mm-hmm. I think for those 2 years, they were legit contenders. And bad losses would just eat me up at night. And, you know, it'd be a little tough to sleep. You'd wake up the next day and, you know, watch SportsCenter, and it would still hurt the next day. And then eventually, you know, you'd get beyond it. I haven't felt that way about any game this season. To me, this is just getting through 66 games, watching some young guys, see if they develop, and just get me to the draft lottery and the NBA draft. That New Jersey game was the first time I had that pit in my stomach where I was kind of upset, and it was because the Hornets won. I think that was a must-lose game.
Must-lose game? I thought you were like the big picture guy here.
I am.
One loss. Okay, there's still, what, 20 something games left?
So that loss shoots them. Okay. So it shoots them beyond Washington for the second most ping pong balls, which I think is huge for a couple reasons. One, there's about a 5% difference in landing Anthony Davis. Actually, it's 4.3%, but whatever. You got the 4.3%. difference in landing Anthony Davis. Also, you're talking about how far the pick could fall. So if you're at 2, you could go to a maximum of 5 as far as how far you fall, 3, 6, you know, whatever. But if you're at 2, you're likely getting a top 4 pick. And there's more and more guys saying they're going to stay in school. So that elite 6 that I talked about earlier, I think has shrunk down to an elite 4 and might even be an elite 2 now after what I've seen kind of in the NCAA tournament. So you got that. You also got the fact that New Jersey's pick isn't their pick anymore, that it's coming to a Western Conference team. You know, so you got New Jersey who you want to win.
But they did win.
No, New Orleans won.
Oh, you're right. What am I saying?
Right. So you want New Jersey to win, so that pick could be worse for Portland. Also, so teams like Golden State and Minnesota could fall below New Jersey for various reasons. It was an absolutely devastating win.
I don't see it. I think New Jersey is with Jared Wallace, they will play better, so I think they're more likely to win more games than the Hornets are going forward.
Yeah, but they need to win a lot more to get that pick. I mean, right now that pick is number 6.
Yeah.
Portland would have the 6th pick and like the the 12th pick plus, as I've already said, you know, some legitimate cornerstones on their team. I don't want that. Plus, I want Golden State to get into one of the top 7 picks so that way Utah doesn't have another lottery pick. You know, another team in the West that has more young talent than the Hornets and as many draft assets. So it was a tough win for me.
All right. Did you see anything in that game that you enjoyed, though? Because there was some good play going on from some of the Hornets youngsters there.
Yeah, it was nice to see Ion, kind of back, especially on the offensive boards. Lance Thomas is a guy that I want to say is a rotation player, except for the fact that I got to remind myself that now Jason Smith is back.
Right.
Gustavo Ayon is there, and the Hornets are likely to draft a power forward, so it's going to be hard for Thomas to crack that rotation do you think the Hornets – Jason Smith basically took minutes from Chris Kaman yesterday. I mean, do you think that was just because the Hornets didn't have a backup center, or do you think that perhaps Monty sees him in that role moving forward?
I think Jason Smith is without question more of a – backup center than a backup power forward. I mean, Jason Smith is, though, I mean, we've said this before, he's a fifth big man. I mean, he's an elite fifth big man, or are you saying elite fourth? Either way, I mean, that's one thing that I mentioned when I covered that New Jersey game is it's going to be really interesting to see which of these players the Hornets decide to keep. Because almost all of these guys are on short-term or you know, end-of-season contracts. How do they put together their rotation going forward? Because they're not gonna be able to go in the summer with the cap space they have and attract any sort of big-name free agent, especially if they have to buy Gordon and put a big contract on the table for him. So, I mean, I can look at this team and legitimately say I see seven different players who I think would be superb on any bench in the league. But you only have a room for like three or four of those guys.
Yeah. Yeah.
We'll have to do a ranking thing when the season ends. We'll have to do a ranking of who are you going to keep if you're Dell Demps.
Yeah, because even, I mean, I think we both wrote Marco Bellinelli off at the beginning of the year.
Yeah, but where'd that come from?
So okay, I mean, you asked me this question before. We had another little twist now. Marco Bellinelli or Xavier Henry. Hornets have a little break for a couple days, so they sent Henry down to the D-League to get some playing time. He actually played today, had a average game, 5 for 12, couple of turnovers, got to the free throw line a couple times. You know, yeah, a couple of young guys played well, but Henry didn't really do much. I mean, do you see Henry or Bellinelli backing up, hopefully, Eric Gordon next year?
I think it all comes down to, I think it's still going to be Henry. And the only reason why is because we already have Henry under contract. So unless Henry is somehow the difference in some sort of trade, I expect them to hold on to Henry and say, Bellinelli, go ahead and walk somewhere.
How about bringing back Willie Green?
Right. Oh, jeez.
So let me ask you this, because I talked to our godfather, Henry Abbott, a little bit at the trade deadline. I don't know if you've seen some of his posts or videos. He's an advocate of Portland completely blowing it up.
Right.
So I asked him if essentially the Hornets gave them, you know, contract filler, but I guess you wouldn't have to do that in the offseason. But essentially the Hornets pick and the Timberwolves pick for LaMarcus Aldridge, would you do it? He answered emphatically yes. One, would you do that from the Hornets' perspective? And whether or not you would do that, how good would this team be with this same cast and crew, a healthy Eric Gordon, and somebody like LaMarcus Aldridge stepping in at the starting power forward position?
I think you end up in the middle of the pack again. And I mean, here's the thing about I would make that trade, honestly, if the Hornets ended up with like fourth or fifth as their first pick.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, but I don't know. Why would Portland make that trade? I don't know. Maybe they would. Maybe they wouldn't. But I mean, Aldridge is a good enough player that, you know, I could conceivably see moving the fourth or fifth pick of a draft for him pretty easily. But if, you know, if it ends up being one, two, or three, I don't know if I'd make that trade. Would you?
Again, it depends who comes out. I'm in love with two prospects. I've been watching your boy Jared Sullinger like a hawk. I'm pretty much Thomas Robinson and Anthony Davis at this point.
Yeah, I could see that.
Yeah.
How about your boy Austin Rivers? I'm not impressed with him.
Yeah, he cannot. He's a lot like Vasquez. He couldn't get around the corner on the on the pick and rolls. But yeah, I don't know. I get this feeling when the trade deadline went down and you read some of Demps's comments. If you kind of read between the lines, I think he's going for something major in the off season, and to me, something major isn't making two draft picks and you know, kind of filling in the roster with the you know, the small forward equivalent of Gustavo Ion that he finds in Iceland.
Right.
So I don't know. I think these guys are going to be out there. I think the LaMarcus Aldridges, the Rajon Rondos are going to be out there. And I think if they don't get one of those top two picks and a guy like Kid Gilchrist goes back to Kentucky, as he said he's going to, you know, I think something like that could be done. And when I look at the Hornets roster, I mean, there's been nights when Jarrett Jack and Grievous Vasquez combined have put up amazing numbers for the point guard position. I think together, you know, they're not that bad. I there's not a ton of holes on this roster. So, you know, just an interesting thing to think about.
Yeah. Yeah. And Anthony Davis, whew, that guy can ball.
He's so, I mean, it's so young. It's so, yeah, I'm just,
I mean, my worst case scenario for him right now is an impact guy like Dikembe Mutombo. I mean, he's not as tall, but I think he's that kind of impact player. And I've always thought, I mean, maybe you disagree, but I thought Dikembe Mutombo, I almost preferred him to Alonzo Mourning.
Yeah, I think it's easier to build a team around a guy like that, a guy who you don't have to feed the ball to, because Alonzo was, I mean, he came up in a golden age of centers,
right,
and he was overmatched at times, but he still, you know, demanded the ball, where it's nice to just have a guy who, you know, do his thing on one end of the court and you don't have to worry about feeding him. But to me, honestly, the worst case scenario for Anthony Davis is Greg Oden. To me, that is the only way. If he's healthy, if he doesn't have a chronic issue like Greg Oden, there's no way that he's not a multi-time All-Star and a guy who's in MVP conversation. There's no possible way to me. I mean, did you see in the other game, the other team got technical free throws? Kentucky has all these NBA players, and they send their center,
right,
a 6'11 guy, to the line to shoot technical free throw. I mean, there's nothing he doesn't have, and people say, oh, he doesn't have go-to post moves. Go back and watch Hakeem Olajuwon when he came into the league. He didn't have any moves.
Right.
Ewing didn't have any moves. So.
He's a freakishly athletic player.
And if a Western Conference team gets him, I'm going to rip my hair out. I mean, the Hornets need to get him, but if they don't, he better go to Charlotte or somewhere where, you know, he's not going to
protect
the Hornets. Yeah. Go somewhere over there and be, but I'm telling you, if some Western guy, I guess Sacramento, they'll just waste him too. They'll probably, they'll trade him for some shoot first point guard, but.
And this is one of the things, like, I've heard recently, people are like really, really stupid about teams and not being able to turn around quickly. We've even said it a few times, like with Charlotte. But, like, take the Wizards, supposedly the most hopeless team in the world. They have Nene now. If they picked up Anthony Davis and had a front line of Davis and Nene, they amnesty Rashard Lewis, so only have $20 million to spend on the wing, and they have John Wall at the point guard, that team could become a playoff team next year.
In the East, yeah. In the West, the East is... I think the Hornets could easily become a playoff team next year in the East. It still pisses me off. I mean, geographically, to me, that would be part of my new lease agreement. You know, give us an all-star.
We're in the East now.
Put us in the Eastern Conference.
Fish us with Milwaukee.
Yeah, I mean, we keep saying, oh, you know, I even remember in 2007, 2008, we were all saying, well, the Hornets are on their way up, and Dallas and San Antonio and blah blah on their way down. Really? When is Dallas and San Antonio going to be on their way down? You know, we're probably saying that it's going to happen again, but once Dallas gets Deron Williams this summer and, you know, whatever else happens from there, it just seems like almost every team in the Western Conference has the potential to, you know, really be good for the next couple of years. So it's going to be hard to navigate, and Anthony Davis has to come and help.
All righty. So, looking forward to this upcoming week, do you want to make any predictions as to how the Hornets are going to do? We got a little bit of a break until Tuesday.
Yeah, a little bit of break allowed.
I'm sorry, until Wednesday.
That allowed Xavier to go down to Iowa, which I'm sure he loved.
So they get Golden State, and then the big game Thursday, which is the Clippers, and Saturday San Antonio, and they're all at home.
Yeah. I think Chris Paul is going to be fired up. I read an article in the ESPN magazine a couple of months ago where, you know how all the old school players say that they hate the fact that, you know, these younger guys are friends, and I wasn't friends with my competition when I was coming up, and it makes them soft, yada, yada.
Hmm.
Well, the stats across the board is that, you know, Chris Paul's stats are up across the board when he plays his quote-unquote friends. And I think it's going to be the same issue with coming back and playing his old team. I mean, he's single-handedly willed them to a couple wins of late. And frankly, that Clippers team is not very – I would take all three of those years, 2006, 7, 7, 8, and 8, 9 Hornets – over the
healthy
Clippers team any day of the week. Not even
healthy.
Yeah.
The Clippers wing players, once Billups went down, those wing players are god awful, and their backup power, their backup big men are ugh.
Do you think there's any chance that Chris Paul leaves after next year?
Yes.
Yeah, I think so too. I think he's got Blake Griffin. I mean, I don't know. But anyway, that's way too far ahead. So this week, yeah, Golden State, you know, they obviously traded their best scorer, and they're kind of doing it with other pieces right now. But I could see them winning that game, but I think the Clippers and San Antonio are kind of in that playoff push mode. And we've seen the Hornets step up against good competition, but I think it's going to be tough to beat either of those teams.
So you think you think it's most like an 0-3?
I think 0-3. I think they'll actually be a little rusty to start off that Golden State game, and I'm going 0-3. And I would say the most winnable is actually that Clippers game. I think if they lose to Golden State, Monty will give them another one of those "you should be embarrassed of yourself" speeches, and it seems like they come out and play well after those kind of games.
So I'm looking forward a little bit to the San Antonio team, and it's because of your comparison earlier this year. I want to see Splitter versus Ione.
Oh.
Two former Spanish League stars battling it out on the hardwood. Who you got? Who's going to have a more impressive game?
I think Splitter, only because he's more aggressive. I still think Ione is too passive. I think that, you know, he's really not going to go out there and try to make an impact. I think he defers a lot to Chris Kaman, especially. So not because he's less skilled, but just because of his role on the team, I think Tiago wins that one.
Right. And that San Antonio team, they just keep ticking. I mean, Ginobili has been injured for most of the season. And, of course, you know, Parker, everybody always forgets how good Parker can actually be. And he's an amazing point guard, even if it is more scoring focused than otherwise.
Yeah, and I think that's the thing with Demps. Like I said earlier, doesn't really value second round picks, you know, even late first runs. You look at that San Antonio team, and they just go pluck a guy like Danny Green basically off the streets. Cleveland had no use for him. They get a guy like Gary Neal out of the D League. They're playing more than James Anderson, who was a first-round pick, and subsequently I know you'd like. But I think Demps just feels like he could do the same thing. I think he thinks he could always fill the 8 through 14 spots on the roster with hungry guys from, you know, some foreign country or from the D-League or who got cut before they really got a chance. And that's why I don't think he values these minor assets as much as, you know, some other people do.
Okay, so I'm gonna go 1-2. I actually do think Golden State falls to the Hornets. I think they take the Hornets lightly, and the Hornets will make them pay for it because they'll play hard.
All right, and I'm actually more excited about another team that has a similar schedule. Minnesota actually plays Golden State and San Antonio this week too, but they're both on the road. Got at Oklahoma City and Denver. What Minnesota's lost basically since that Rubio game where he got injured, they're 1-5 over their last six.
Yeah.
Just as we thought, right now the Hornets would have the 11th pick in the draft from them.
Yeah. Let me say one thing about them before we go, because this is something that bugs the hell out of me. When he went down, I saw probably 5 or 6 different writers say, well, it doesn't matter that much that he's down because he can't shoot. And, you know, Ridenhour, his career numbers are better than Rubio's anyways. So Ridenour is going to take over that team, and it's not going to matter. Are people completely blind that defense is half of the game?
They are. I mean,
holy crap. Ridenour is a horrible defender. And I would say Rubio is already one of the best three or four defensive point guards in the league.
And I don't think that is going to change until we find – I mean, I know that we have, you know, points per under possessions and stuff, but there's going to have to be some way to individually measure players, you know, give them individual defensive stats beyond, you know, blocks and steals, which to me don't really showcase how good of a defender you are anyway.
Right.
It's that, and it's also look at their turnovers. They're back to that same Minnesota team from last year. I mean, they turned the ball over 21 times today against Sacramento. So yeah, it's defense, and now they're giving the ball back up. I mean, they could still score. Love and Pekovic, I think I'm probably going to sound stupid. I haven't thought this completely through, but to me, I would say they're a top 3, 4, 5 combo in the league. I can't think of, you know, at least on the offensive end, I can't think of many combinations at the power forward and center that are more physically intimidating and versatile than those two. So those guys are still fine. Minnesota's still going to score, but they're just turning the ball over like they did last year, and the defense is absolutely horrible. So I expect the slide, you know, to continue. Their schedule gets a little easier in April, but, you know, there's that psychology you got to think of. I mean, those guys were playing. They were excited. They were on their way to the playoffs. If they get 3, 4, 5 games out of the playoffs, well, they already are. If they continue to fall, it's just we're the same old sorry Timberwolves. And, you know, I could see a plummet to where I said 11th pick was the bottom. But the way some other teams are playing, that pick could get to 7 or 8.
We can hope.
That's all I'm doing, hoping.
All right. Well, thanks, everybody, for listening to In the Know. We'll be back next week to talk about the 3-0 week the Hornets had, completely shattering every future hopes and dreams the entire team has, and the complete loss of Michael McNamara's sleep patterns.
Devastated. Let's have the ball turn really each and every day.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, UNIFYD, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.